Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest, deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. Nightbirds, I'm excited to announce the inaugural flight of the Nightbird Radio Patreon. I've been searching for ways to bring y'all into the flock, to get y'all more involved, to offer more opportunities for you to support, and to continue to grow in what I can contribute to you, my listeners. And I've landed on Patreon. So for just $3.33 a month, you'll get access to monthly Q&As, bonus panel discussions on member-selected topics, and membership in our private Discord server, where you can perch on the wires and sing with other Nightbirds, guests of the show, and yours truly. Visit patreon.com/nightbirdradio to join. That's patreon.com/nightbirdradio. Patrons will be mentioned on the show and listed in the show notes. I'm excited to invite you to join me on this new journey for the podcast, and I look forward to flying with you. Now, let's get to the conversation. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, I am excited to be joined by Nick Newell. Nick is a tarot reader and a tarot teacher. Nick, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, Tim. It's awesome to be on here.
Yeah, it's great. So we met actually at the local crystal shop, Eclipse over Roswell, like just kind of randomly, you know. I was in there to buy candles, as one does, and ran into you.
And I'm only there one day a week. So, I mean, it was pretty serendipitous that you walked in when you did.
I love it, dude. I love that kind of stuff. Like, that's, to me, it's like, okay, things are moving, things are shaking.
Yeah.
So real quick, do you want to give the listeners a rundown of like what you offer, where they can find you, what you've got going on, so that they know I'm fresh on their minds, like where they can find you?
Absolutely. The easiest way to get direct contact with me is through my website, newelltarot.com. I also produce regular Instagram videos at newelltarot. You'll get lots of information on what I'm about just in those two forms. And I'm easy to contact either through the form on my site, or you can instant message me. If you find me around town, I do a lot of different fairs. I'm at Eclipse over Roswell regularly on Mondays and Thursdays. Be happy to hand you my card with my personal contact. Talking about tarot is what I love to do the most. So if anybody's ever got questions, even beyond wanting lessons, wanting readings, I'm more than happy to work with those questions.
Awesome, man. That's exciting. So we'll get into your journey here in a second. I love tarot because it is like, to me, it's just like a really, the way my mind works, I just think it, you know, everyone has their divination thing, and I work with runes too, and I love the runes, but there's something about the tarot that, like, when you look at a tarot spread, it almost comes alive. Like, it starts to move. Like, it's a little movie.
I love that it has that quality, and that, you know, I focus a lot on what deck are you using? What language is it speaking? And so when you say it's like a movie, like, there's a whole world of different movies you can get depending on what kind of deck that you use, what spread you use, and your approach.
Very cool. And we'll get into all that too, because I wanted to ask about spreads, approaches, what your approach to it, what your metaphysics of the tarot is. But real quick, I want to ask you, I have a question that I like to ask every guest, if I can remember to. And that question is, Nick, what were you afraid of as a child?
I grew up in a deeply Christian environment. And frankly, the thing that I was most afraid of was inviting demonic influence into my life that would separate me from the divine. It was terrifying. because I had a difficult time getting a lot of personal support, a lot of emotional support from the people around me. My relationship with God was my foundation to reality. And if anything interrupted that, I wasn't going to have anything. So that was the thing that brought the most fear onto me as a kid.
And what's your relationship to that now?
It has transformed dramatically. I have found that I've got a much more technical relationship with spirit. I have been contacted by ancestors that are clearly protecting and guiding me. And as long as I maintain my sense of protection, that I'm doing the right things, following that guidance, it's almost as if I don't feel the need to be afraid of anything, because no matter what happens to me, I'm putting the right energy out and it's going to get utilized in helpful ways.
Yeah, I really like that. I relate to it a lot because I had this similar upbringing. It was weird because it was actually like something that I sought out. It wasn't really pushed on me. My mom was like, if you want to go to church, that's cool. You know what I mean? And I was like, no, I'm just like seeking an intense spiritual experience, which kind of brought me to the same place of what you described. It's interesting because from what you're talking about, what it made me think of in my experience was coming to understand the idea of like, and I'm doing air quotes here, but like sin as more of like it's like a hygiene question, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how am I thinking? How am I living? What are the things I'm doing? What am I attracting into my life? Because if I'm living at a low vibration and I'm thinking only of, what I can take, what I can get from life, what I'm going to extract from other people and extract from my environment and even the spirit environment, I was like that for a little bit too. Then the kind of things I'm going to attract, I always lived like that and then wondered, why do I have such bad luck? Why are there always scumbaggy things happening to me? And I didn't realize it was because I was being scumbag. I was doing scumbaggy things and having scumbaggy things happen to me. So I relate to that a lot because I think it's interesting. You know, we talk of in the evangelical circles, you hear about sin and it's almost like this permanent state. Like if I do it, I'm going to be like that forever. But to me, a really more useful way to understand it, and I still truck with some of those ideas because they're really powerful magic. But it's more of as like a state that I can get in that's out of alignment, but I can always get back into alignment. Does that track with you?
Absolutely. And, you know, as my alternative to the concept of the way that sin moves us away from the divine is that if we perceive the divine as being all around us and that the spirits that are working for us, they have a broader understanding of what's good in our lives and what we need. They're part of a spiritual network. We're part of a physical network. We need each other.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be a cancerous element that is destroying the network, but still can't exist without it. Your sense of alignment is being in alignment with the network. So you've got plenty of checks around you, things to refer to, feelings to rely on that are going to help you feel like you're in sync with the network and doing it right.
Oh, that's really well put. Yeah, definitely. It's a community thing. Like that becomes very, so like, it wasn't so easy for me to see how I was affecting the invisible community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see how I was affecting the visible one. And that's like, you know, but it's interesting because I think they feed into each other in ways that I never knew. We have this idea of division and then there's like the spirit world and then here's the physical world. But it's like it's all flowing in and out of each other.
Truly. Yeah.
And so what you're talking about is cool because it comes directly to divination.
Mm-hmm.
The more I'm in alignment with spirit And the more I'm, and honestly, too, the more I'm in alignment with the physical, you know, by being, to me, it's like keeping spiritual disciplines, right? Like meditating regularly, a cleansing practice, hygiene practice, all that kind of stuff. That keeps my channel open, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And so, so that's cool. So I want to know how you went from that very rigid Christian upbringing to being like a tarot reader. I know that might be like a very big question, but like, were there any big moments that like, that changed your trajectory? I'm sure there were, but if there's some that are on the top of your mind.
I mean, looking back at it, it does feel like a very long straight line for me.
Cool.
Because being part, like I was a Jehovah's Witness is how I grew up.
Okay.
And my study of the Bible, because they encourage you to read the Bible personally, that in itself became a mystical experience for me.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from the way that both the ancient Hebrews, the later Greek Hebrews living under the Roman Empire, the way they understood their world and its magical nature in relation to God. And I actually was, I was sort of pushed out of the religion and felt very socially estranged. I wasn't supposed to be friends with anybody from school, but even knowing that, some of my old schoolmates found me and brought me into their social world. And at that time, you know, I felt like I was starting to build a support group again, but I still wanted a spiritual aspect in my life. So I started studying, reading as much as I could. At that time, tarot was just like a side note. Like I thought it more had roots in Arthurian mythology than anything else. But even as I got a master's degree and got more involved in the study of religion, I found that the tarot was the thing that was helping me the most socially. When I went to parties, I'd pull out a deck, start doing readings. I'd read for 4 or 5 hours while, you know, I drank and danced and whatever.
Good stuff.
And that was the thing that was helping me build connection. And it was something that stuck with me through all those years and all that learning as something that was having an impact on me and the people around me. And I, again, like that sense of connection was really the thing that has continued to motivate me. And I find that the tarot is the most powerful tool I've got to connect with a person's deeper life and immediately get into what's really concerning you. What's really interesting to you? What do you want out of this life?
I love it. So that's cool because that's a really concrete example of what you talked about, where the connection with the spiritual did, like you can see the side-by-side growth of your connection to the physical, whatever you want to call it, meat space network.
Yeah, man.
Of your, you know, getting to know people better, like they came hand in hand. That's really great. I love it. So what made you get into the tarot? Because so when you were you into it before you left Jehovah's Witnesses, or were you? Tell me a little bit about
that. Part of it is that I've always been obsessed with cards.
Yeah.
I was dealing poker from the time that I was 5 years old on the school bus because I had the hands that were big enough to shuffle even at that age. And I've always been crazy about playing cards. So the way that historically tarot evolved into the smaller pack that we think of as a poker deck, but it itself originated as a game that we don't even know the full history of because, you know, pieces of paper just sort of disappear in history.
Yeah.
And that I always found fascinating about it. And it kind of created the hook that made that my primary tool.
Very nice. Okay, so that's a good segue for us to get into kind of the history. Okay, so you, I remember you mentioned that you work with the Tarot de Mersey.
That's right.
And that's like your main focus, right? In mm-hmm. terms of decks. So let's see. Do you want to go first into like why the Tarot de Mersey for you? And we're just going to call
I'm
just going to call it the TDM from here on out for the listeners. That's so much easier. So if you're listening, when we say TDM, we mean the Tarot de Mersey. So, yeah, why the TDM for you?
Well, I did work with the Rider-White Smith deck for a solid 13 years. But I always wanted there to be a consistent system between the numbers, between the suits, that created a comprehensive story in the deck. And I was just not getting that out of the White Smith deck. I read Alejandro Jodorowsky's The Way of the Tarot, and he describes the TDM in a much more systematic way. And it's not, though I don't agree with every single word that he wrote, I feel like it's a really powerful tool. But his work helped me to think about that deck in particular as a document that is continuously self-referential. You don't need to know anything outside of the deck and your own experience of life in order to get a really rich and deep understanding of that deck. And so why I like to start with that as the teacher is that it came along before people started to apply ideas like the Kabbalah and astrology and other methods of numerology from other parts of the world. The TDM is a complete document in itself. It is what those later occultists were referring to when they created these systems of references.
Yeah, very cool. So can you give a little bit of a, I know the history is a little foggy, but the history of the TDM, where does it come from? What is, I know, you know, it was a game, right? But what,
right,
do we, like, there's a point at which it kind of fades into myth and all the things that people say are speculation, right? That's interesting to me. So can you talk a little bit about that history?
Absolutely. And I'm continually refining my own understanding of it, you know, as I find more evidence and information. The earliest references we have to playing cards at all are church documents condemning them from the 1300s. So we know that people were playing cards in taverns, almost certainly gambling around them, and the church was seeing this as a bad influence. We don't really see evidence of any actual decks until the 1400s. And the ones that we have are almost all Italian as far as European ones go. We know that there were cards in other parts of the world, but in Europe, the Italian decks were the first ones that we've got historical evidence of. And these fancy decks that we know about were being produced for rich families. They would get professional artisans who are also scholars to create decks for them. And the more impressive they were, the better. So often there'd be an aspect of, well, you know, I want my family to be portrayed in the deck that you're making for me artistically, but I also want it to be really clever. So try to hide some secrets and ideas, some philosophy in this deck, so that when my friends come over to play cards, I can show them how smart I am with the deck that I own. We also learn that as decks were becoming a more popular format of document, many scholars were using them as reference source material, something you could easily carry with you, more so than a big book full of printed pages, that if you were a student, if you were a professional, you could use that deck as a reference point for certain things you need to remember. So some scholars believe that the original source material for the TDM was as the spiritual reference that Neoplatonists, people who are reading about Gnosticism, trying to make sense of that in combination with their modern Catholicism as well as classicism, so the pagan gods, they utilize this deck as a way to wrap up their ideas as a somewhat secret document. They didn't write down the explanation for it, but they were discussing, how do we symbolize these concepts in a way that we can carry around in our pocket and have an easy reference to?
That's really interesting to me, because I talk about this a lot, and I think, you know, honestly, I think about it a lot too, about the way in which an image can encode so much more information than, say, you know, like a word itself, right? Like, and this is like one of the reasons why, like, the Egyptians understood this, right? Like the hieroglyphs, yeah. Like there is so much able to be encoded into those images. Like, it isn't just the meaning of the image. There's other esoteric meanings. There's like very, very like nuts and bolts, like just the kind of things you would use in a spreadsheet sort of meanings too, right? Like logistical kind of things.
Sure.
So that like the document can have like five different meanings if it's made of images, five or, you know, or more. That's just a number I'm throwing out. Whereas, yeah, like, you know, words can do that too, but it's much more difficult. It's much, yes, more difficult to do it with words. Whereas in images, and this is like how I think myth works too. It's, my apologies, I think that's me going off. It is information that has been passed down by the ancient ancestors in the form of symbolism, stories, images, that there isn't, like, what's interesting about it is that the story itself is, like you said, it's a, like you said, how the TDM is a consistent document, like the myth, the story itself is a description of how to decipher it.
Yes.
Like, and so, like, as you are initiated deeper and deeper into the images, you get more and more every time. That's just so fascinating to me. And it's genius.
Well, it really is genius. And the layers of dimension that I find in that particular deck, it brings people to have so many different conversations, so many different perspectives on what comes up, even as you just put two cards next to each other. There is a wealth of exploration to be done there.
Yeah.
And you find out so much about yourself and about that other person. I mean, it becomes this amazing resource to get together over.
Yeah. Do you have that? I want to ask you this because I have this all the time. Do you have that thing where, like, you're reading for someone and then all of a sudden it's like, is this spread talking to me too?
What I get especially is, you know, I'll be at a fair or a market doing reading after reading after reading. And I'll find some days that the same two or three cards are coming up in every reading.
Yeah.
And so I'm listening to myself interpret these cards, think through them with this other person. And there are themes that are coming up that I'm repeatedly talking about. And suddenly thinking, well, wait, like, are those themes that are a message for me that I've been working with, that in a way I've kind of been positioned to process that and then teach these other people about it because they also need the same thing. And that's why they're sitting in front of me today.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's like how we ran into each other. Like, I just don't believe in coincidences. Like, I just don't think, like, there are coincidences in the sense that they coincided. Like, the incident happened at the same time. But to me, that's even more proof. Like, it's one of those things where if someone tries to explain away a coincidence, their explanation is less compelling than just saying, like, everything happens for a reason. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like, you have to go into all these crazy statistics and it's like, you're losing me, dude.
Well, and even from a purely practical standpoint, if you believe that nothing in your life happens because it's meant for you, then where is the meaning in your life? Where do you get it from? But if you find that you go to the market, you have conversations with people, you feel like it was meant for you and brought to you, and you build on that and you do something with it, that encourages you to enrich that relationship because you see yourself personally in the incident. And yeah. I think there's a lot of beauty in that.
And even if, you know, I know people that it's like, well, and I'm to some extent this way too, where it's like, it's up to me to ascribe the meaning to it, but there you go. Right. Like I am participating in it. I am using isn't the word I want to use, but I'm participating in the event and I'm looking into the mirror.
Yes.
Everything is this mirror. And I think one of the coolest things about the tarot is this mirror that it holds up to us.
Absolutely. And that's a big theme of kind of the way that I teach about it is utilizing it as that mirror.
Yeah. And it's just so interesting how, you know, you talk about the decks, the languages of each deck. They each have their personalities too.
Oh yeah.
Like some are super sassy.
Mm-hmm.
Are like really just like, just do not pull punches. Some of them are more playful. It just depends on the deck. And you know, obviously that's going to have something to do with the artist, but there's more to it, right? There's a spirit element there.
I definitely think so. And, you know, I've got a lot of people that are regular readers that I talk to. Some of them are in love with the same decks. And they will agree, like, well, this one is a little mean, but it speaks to one person in a fairly different context from another, kind of because of their own experience with that energy and how they react to it and how that makes them feel.
Yeah, I think it works that way with our spirit allies too. Like,
yeah.
Because some of us vibe with different spirits, and like some spirits that are cool with me, like other people would be like, damn, this is difficult. Like, you know, because like I, you know, some of them spirits will straight up trick me into
completely, yeah.
into a lesson, you know?
That's why I'm so adamant that as we all develop our spiritual perception and our sense of depth in the dimensions of this world, that we reach out to each other for feedback, because we're all going to encounter and feel this stuff in different ways. No one of us is the source of truth. It's us together that creates a bigger truth that we can all refer to.
I like that. It makes me think of what you were talking about when you mentioned the cards enriching each other by being placed next to each other. It's like the same thing is going on, right? It's like, that's what I think like this podcast is for, like one of the things it is. It's like the ability to place us next to each other and see the webs that are, some of them that are more entangled and some of them may not be so, but we get to see that, you know, like where it is. And I just love the opportunity, because to me, it's like, I'm just learning. Like everyone I invite on here, it's just an opportunity for me to learn more and more. I'm just sitting here like absorbing, you know?
Completely.
That's one of the coolest things about this time. Like, you know, people can complain about technology, but I'm like, dude, I have a lot of friends because of this. I have a lot of connections because of this. Like, it's really what I make it. Like, again, it's another mirror. Like, yes, if I look at the tarot and every reading is like, you suck, you suck, you suck, that's probably saying more about my own lens of viewing things, you know, like, and the interesting thing is, like, you're talking about the different, like some of them seem mean. I actually like the mean ones because they're like, it's kind of like how, you know, you have that friend who's brutally honest.
Yeah.
But like, I'm going to ask them how I look because I want to know the truth.
For real. Right. Yeah.
Like, how do I look today, dude? Not looking good. You need to, you know, some cucumbers on your eyes or something. Like, that's good information. That's good intelligence. Like, I can work with that. So cool. That brings us to another thing I wanted to talk about, which is, and we've danced around it a little bit, but a metaphysics of the tarot. Like, so from where you're coming from, how does the tarot work? That's a big question, but we'll dive into granular stuff.
My personal methodology is that the tarot's got a structure. And when you understand the structure, you see how there are spiritual elements running through different cards. So I use numerology a lot. I'll talk about how the fives have a common quality from the fives in the four suits to the Pope or the Hierophant and the Devil. There's a thread in common that metaphysically they are all referring to, but with these very different aspects depending on exactly which five they are. And in the same way that we can feel the forest spirit in general that is in every forest we walk through, but then each forest has its own particular enriched, localized nature and spiritual qualities. In tarot, you've kind of got these larger themes of a suit, a number that hold a spirit in common, and then much more particular qualities as you're thinking about each individual card, and then each instance of that card next to this card, next to this card in a spread. So I definitely feel like every card's kind of got its spirit. And in caring for your relationship with that card, you're enriching your knowledge of that spiritual quality and having a better opportunity to connect with others over it.
I love that. Yeah, I'm so well put that I don't even like it made me a little speechless. That's great. Yeah. The relationship to each card. Yeah. And so maybe I'll be kind of wandering far off because this is a question I wanted to ask down the road, but you're saying it now. So why not? Like, so are there practices that you do to enrich your relationship with each of those cards, or is it just reading, or is there something more that you do? Like, do you do contemplation of the cards, things like that?
I worked through a method of tarot meditations for myself that I'm currently writing out, performing for others, kind of workshopping so that I can present them to people. It's very rare that I find a person who said, well, I read a book and now I just understand all this.
Right.
So one thing that I do is I will take the two major cards of the same number. So take the Magician and Strength, they're both ones. And then I'll go through each of the minor cards that are ones and think, all right, well, how does the One of Swords relate to the Magician's energy? What's the relationship there? You know, we've got the Suit of Swords about air, about the mind, about ephemeral things that still have an effect on us, but may not last very long. What does that have to do with what I see in the Magician? And then also, what does it have to do with what I see in Strength? How do these things relate? And that's getting me to know both the major cards as well as that minor card in a much more particular way and helping me think about my life in reference to that card. And I've done this with every single card, also sort of thinking about how they bump up against the cards around them. So if we've got the Ace of Swords and then the Two of Swords, how are they different? How do they relate to one another? What's the flow between them? And then, like, if they're reversed in a spread, what's the flow there? Does it feel negative and restrictive? Is there still something useful to be gotten there? How am I going to describe that energy for myself and for others? And it sounds like a long process because there are 78 cards, but doing it over and over again has made me feel completely comfortable with the entire deck. Every card's my friend now.
That's awesome. I like it. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about, since you mentioned reversals, let's talk about reversals real quick. What is your theory of reversals, how those work? Like, I've seen a lot of different explanations. Like, personally, I don't really pay a lot of attention to them. And honestly, I won't use them most of the time. That's just me personally. That could be like, you could be like, oh my God, you know what I mean? Cause I feel like for me, I feel like every card has there's like a skillful energy and an unskillful energy that can be expressed in each card. And so, and without putting, you know, words in your mouth, like talk about reversals a little bit.
It's one of my favorite things to workshop over because everybody does it a little different. When I'm doing a spread layout that's got particular positions, so like say the Celtic Cross, I'm not going to do reversals because to me, every card in that spread is a reference to the other cards. In certain positions with other cards around it, a card's just going to be difficult. it doesn't matter if it's upside down or not. It's going to be a challenge for the person dealing with the rest of that energy. So generally that way, I'm not going to read reversals. However, there are spreads where I'll just take the deck, hand it to somebody, and say, spread the whole deck out on this table. And then point to some cards, and let's flip them over and see what the deck has to say to you. Mm-hmm. In those cases, if, say, we've got the magician upside down, and he's, let's say, above the tower, then that's speaking to a certain kind of energy where the magician does not have his feet on the ground anymore, and he's flowing towards something that is necessarily disruptive. And so I'm going to talk more about how, in that layout where you have kind of determined where the cards are and their orientation with each other, that that's going to speak to something important for you at that moment.
Yeah, that's really good. So that reading you're talking about is like a casting. You're like casting it, yeah, like you'd cast runes or bones. That's good. I want to check that one out. I might have to come to you for one of those because I've never had that before. Yeah. So again, it's a relational thing. Like, so if I'm already getting the relationship from the positioning of the cards, like obviously, like, because so like some of the positions in the reading may be like, what is the difficulty or what is the action to take?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to know. But when it's giving me more context, then it's obviously going to be a little more useful. That's good. I really like that. You might have just sold me on them, to be honest, because I was like, damn, I'm going to have to do them more often. So, yeah, talking about spreads, like what are some particular spreads that you enjoy using or that you find to be particularly useful? Or is it, I'm sure you've used a ton. Yeah, talk about spreads a little bit.
I've tried a lot of different ones. I've been reading for 20 years, so I've really tried every one that I've run across. For the most part, and especially for people getting started, I'm a stickler to the idea that three cards is the best way to begin. And thinking about past, present, future in a situation is the simplest way, but there are so many different ways that you can think about those three cards. Whether it is self, problem, solution. There's an interesting one I use referred to as the veil, where you've got your perception of the situation, the thing that is clouding your perception, and then the truth behind that perception. And that can get you in a lot of really interesting directions as far as why you think the way that you think. Starting with three cards is going to let you triangulate the meaning of those cards and work them into a sentence. But what I like to do for people who come to me with a particular question on a very pointed problem is I'll look for a card in the major arcana that relates directly to that problem, and I've got a spread for every single card. So if somebody comes to me with a question about their sexuality, then we're going to talk about the devil spread. And I'm going to lay out a card for the two characters at the bottom, different aspects of the devil character himself, the torch in his hand. And we're going to talk about how the energy of those symbols influences the answer to your question and what the cards have to say to you. And in that way, I have a chance to have a clear reference point for what that spread is describing in the cards themselves, and also a way to talk more about the energy of that particular major arcana. So again, using the deck to interpret itself and create this enriched experience of the cards.
That's really cool. I haven't heard of that one. And that's another one I'm going to look into. See, I'm learning stuff. Just in these couple minutes we've been talking already, I'm learning so much. Okay, so that's cool, because that brings us now to another thing I wanted to ask about, which are the major and minor arcana. And I like that we're just basically going through like a crash course on like all the concepts of tarot, which isn't necessarily how I set this up, but for anyone listening that's their first time, be great. Going back to the TDM, I think it's interesting to maybe give a little bit more of someone that hasn't experienced or even looked at those cards.
Yeah.
It's a lot more like a deck of cards. if you want to give a brief explanation of like of what that deck looks like, maybe, or they can, you know, they should go look it up too, but
Yeah, and you can find a lot of great references online. If you just type in Tarot of Marseille into Google and go to image search, you'll find complete decks out there. The things that are more unique about that style of deck is that, for one thing, the suits are not the more kind of mystical pentacles, wands, chalices, but they're more everyday things. You've got coins, staffs, which are really just sticks, swords, and cups. And they're presented in more of an everyday manner. And in those minor cards, you've got what we call pip cards rather than the full illustrations that you'll find on the Rider White deck and other decks that are inspired by it. And so the six of coins is just six coins, but then there is always a floral design in the card as well. And by taking a look at the vines, the stalks, and flowers that are growing around that set of symbols, you get a sense of what the card means. So, for instance, when I talk about the six of coins, you have three coins on each side and a staff. Well, I'm thinking more about the six of cups. It's three cups on each side with a staff that's right between them. And so you get this sense that there's a set of two threes, which is the number of growth in the deck. And these are gathered around something that may allow them to come together or may keep them separate. It's a card of connection, but there's this question of how deep that connection is going to be. So there are all these little visual reference points that, to me, give you a wider body of possible interpretations that are a little more abstract than an illustration of a character who is doing something very specific with a particular expression on his face that gives you a more pointed, emotional, and active concept of what that card means.
That's great. You just answered the next question I was going to ask without me even having to ask it. I was going to say, does the more abstract representation of the numbered pips allow for a greater wealth of interpretation, which you're saying it does?
It gives you more range. I mean, I think about it in terms of a tool that has a lot more possibilities, but because of those possibilities, it takes some more time to learn because there's a lot to grapple with there.
Yeah, it's difficult because, like, I'm not super versed in the TDM. Like, I have one and I've used it and, like, I understand, but I don't, like, when it comes to, like, if I'm going to be reading for someone else, I am not going to use that one because I am not super confident in my ability to, like, look at all those pips and, like, I don't know, just looks like a bunch of coins, man. Yeah. Which sometimes actually that is enough. It's like, well, if it's a bunch of coins, there's a bunch of coins coming. You know what I mean? Or like, there's something here that's going to allow you to get more coins. And that's, it is something that I do like about it because it's weird because it's like, it's simpler in a way. And then it's incredibly complex at the same time.
Well,
there's
and
a
one
very
of my students,
wide range.
One of my students related it to reading tea leaves. So really you're kind of like looking at the mass of where things have gathered and extracting what you can with your intuition and your sense of, well, what could that mean in relation to this situation, this person?
Yeah. Cool. And so that gives us a nice kind of crash course on the minors. Cause I think really, you know, like you said, since the Rider Waite Smith was kind of based on this, getting an understanding of the TDM does, you know, also give us an understanding of that
for sure,
you know, just by that being downstream of it. So real quick though, let's talk about the suits.
Mm-hmm.
Are the elemental attributions of the suits, is that a later addition or is that around in the TDM some?
Because nobody wrote a book on the TDM in its initial design, the historian in me cannot say, well, yes, absolutely, they were there. But if you look at the Aces and the way that they're characterized, there's definitely a sense that the ancient Greek elemental attributes are all incorporated in the nature of those cards. And even the way you think about the fact that a coin lays flat down on the ground, there's this sense of it wanting to be in contact with foundation, earth, grounding, and the fact that it's made of metal and just sort of stamped with an image. So it's what we can make of the bare resources around us, like the earth. Whereas in staffs with fire, you're both talking about the basic material that most people make fire out of, right? Wood. And then there's kind of this valence that fire goes wherever there's fuel for it, in the same way that plants grow wherever there is space, wherever they can get to the heat of the sun. So that sense of heat, growth, expansion, the use of energy is all right there. So if you take a close look at the way that the cards are put together, the symbols on them, I feel like those elemental essences are implied in the nature of the cards.
Yeah, and I like it too, because again, it's a mirror. Like, we can't get away from it, because it's like those symbols, at least from a Western perspective, are like the building blocks of, like, they're like in our language, right?
Yeah.
Like, just the way you talk about them, like, you can't help but invoke it. So it's like they're inextricable. It's bound up, and that's why I think it's so potent. And it's always been, to me, I was always fascinated with it without even really knowing why. I was just like, oh, it just looks cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a cool thing. Like, it just looks cool. Cool. So let's talk now about the majors. Are the majors a later edition as well? Do we know that? Like, what's the story there? And talk a little bit about what they are, too, for the uninitiated, so that they might get an idea.
The majors are a group of 22 cards. There's the Fool, which initially was not numbered in most of the decks. And then you have 1 through 21. And the origin of these cards was in the game that was played with the tarot deck. It was called Triomphe in France. It was called Tarocchi in Italy. And it's where the concept of a trump card comes from in games like spades or hearts. So we know they were playing some kind of trick-taking game like those. And the major arcana, or what we know now as the major arcana, those were the triomphe, the trump cards. So they were a suit that, in theory, could beat any other card. Although, unfortunately, we've lost the rules to that game because everybody just had them in their head. They didn't, write pamphlets about it.
And so those, like, the way we look at them now, and you described it a little bit before, is they kind of tell a story that's, to me, it's like, it's the hero's journey, basically, right? It starts at these humble beginnings and it ends in the sky.
Yeah.
And these very big concepts, right? And so what's your cosmology of that? Like, are you thinking about it as kind of the first, it's 11 and 11, right? Or is it 12? You just said it.
Yeah, you've got 11 and 11 in the two
11
sides.
And 11. So the first 11 and the second 11 are like kind of telling the same story, but the second one is like, the first one is like, I don't want to say it's more mundane. I mean, there's still like magicians and stuff, but it's a little more mundane. Yeah. It's dealing with like mundane forces, like emperors and laws and things. And then the second one is like, like the heavens, the stars and all these. So, if you want to talk a little bit about that and maybe how that has developed to our current understanding of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The way that I look at it, just from having studied the images for a long time, and I do admit that I draw a bit of Jodorowsky's influence, because this is how it first made the most sense to me. is that the cards from the Fool, or really more from the Magician up to the Wheel of Fortune, 1 through 10. In all of the cards, these characters are wearing clothes, and all of them describe a person in a role. So you've got Magician, the initially Popess, now we call it the High Priestess, the Empress, the Emperor, the Pope. These are all people serving particular roles in society. Even the Chariot, which is not a person, but it's clearly a conveyance for a person. All of them refer to the way that we interact with each other in certain roles. So to me, those first 10 cards are about our external presentation to the world. Who do we want to be to others? And how are we received in those positions? And then the Wheel of Fortune was actually a really popular concept in the medieval era that the deck came out of. This idea that, you know, things go around and around for people. You really never know how things are going to turn out for you. And even though somebody could be highborn and wealthy and seem like they've got everything they're going to need, they could still have a miserable and difficult life and end up with nobody liking them or wanting to have anything to do with them by the end. You just don't know. So the card and the wisdom in it, because you've got a character sort of watching from the top, is that we all have a chance to look at the Wheel of Fortune and figure out how we want to execute our roles. What's really going to work for us? Because once we're on the wheel, it's generally spinning so fast that we're just trying to stay on the wheel without getting thrown off. Whereas the second set from 11 through 20, these are all much more abstract concepts. You've got strength, you've got a guy hanging upside down, you have temperance. The 13 actually didn't originally have a word on it, so there was no name, even though today we think about it as death. Thinking about the image without any verbal concept changes it a bit. And all of these cards in the second set, they have more to do with internal qualities. So if the first 10 are about our external presentation of the world, the second 10 are about how we are processing what happens to us and who we become to ourselves. So our internal nature, how we define things and take them in. And in this way, it kind of gives me a little bit more valence to consider when these cards come up, especially when they come up in the pairs. So if you've got strength and the Magician, there's an interesting tension in your spread that has a lot to do with the way that you deal with the beginning of things. And then the Fool is very much our ego, the part of ourselves that is exactly who we are, what we personally want out of life, why we think we're important. And it's also that sense that we don't know what's going to happen, so that's why we do things. If we knew the outcome of every action, we probably wouldn't do anything. But we need our foolishness to keep us motivated. And the world is the sense of completeness. It's all of our subjective life wrapped up into our own story. And so in this way, you kind of get a sense of these 22 things that can express the entire journey of life for anybody.
Yeah, I like it. I love that image of the Fool too, that initiatory. He's just walking off the edge of a cliff. Like he's no idea
where he's going,
what he's getting into. Yeah. And it's like, that's God. I relate. I just relate to that guy.
Well, one thing I love about the TDM Fool is that he's carrying this package on a pole over his shoulder, and the way that he's depicted, the pole seems to be cutting his head right off. So his possessions are actually keeping his brain from coordinating his body and creating this interruption in his sense of self and his ability to really understand what's around him.
Oh interesting. That makes me think of some stuff too. I'm a big headless right guy. I don't know.
Familiar
with that, but it's like the idea of headlessness is one. It's obviously very, very common in occult symbolism, that headless idea, right? Very good. Let's see what else I got here. I kind of went out of order, so I'm just looking at my notes. Okay, so this is a question I want to ask. It's a big one, but we're not shying away from those things here. Okay, so we've kind of established like how it works. And now we want to talk a little bit more about like why it works. Like, and so more specifically, what does the fact that tarot works say about the way that the universe works? Like, what does the fact that tarot works say about the reality that we inhabit?
That's a powerful question. The nature of tarot that I have found most applicable is that it is cyclical. That in the suits themselves and in the majors, you can always go from the end of the cycle to the beginning of another if you've got that courage to be a beginner. And it seems the case that in the way that species evolve, the way that stars explode and then create the potential for new different stars, that really is the way that our material world is oriented, that things have an arc of experience. In the middle, they are deeply involved in providing and exchanging energy. And then at the end, they are getting back to an initial selfness, but a selfness that can disseminate into non-existence and create other potential singularities and selves. And if we think of our lives in this way, I feel like a lot of those ego concerns of the fool drop away because we see that in everything that we end, in every anxiety about where things are going, we've got this chance to contribute to everybody around us and to be carried on in them, in their perceptions, even in the very ground beneath us. And there's a lot of wonder in that. And the fact that we have received that in order to be ourselves is an incredible thing. And that's a lot of what I think about when I consider the tarot writ large on the themes of the universe.
I love it. Beautiful. And I also have, I think about this a lot because I think that the ancients, and even shit, even like 200 years ago, they understood better. But they understood that this idea of cycles and that it was always kind of like this breathing in and out, breathing in and out. In Vedic stuff, you have like the, I like to talk about the Kali Yuga, but they have the Yuga cycles and it's always just kind of death, rebirth, things decaying, returning to the earth so that other things can grow up out of the earth and use those as nourishment. And nothing is ever really lost. It's this like the conservation of energy applies to all these things. And especially, from what we know about fields and energy and how that works, there's a lot of really interesting potential there. But yeah, so we somehow have gotten ourselves, and I think it's getting better, but I say we as in just like society at large, because obviously we don't feel this way, but I think we've gotten ourselves into a place where we think that progress is linear and it's always going to be going in this one direction. And that we, and I think it comes with a hubris. There is a hubris there because there's this idea that, like, since progress is linear, we can get further along the line than the people that came before us. And like it makes us better than them or smarter than them somehow. But what it's actually done is disconnected us from the reality of that we're living in. And what I think is so great about the tarot is what you said. It reconnects me with the reality that I'm in. Like I'm not in a delusion of this linear progress that moves forward and forward forever. It right sizes me and puts me back into relation with like this living universe that's always in a state of flux, where nothing is ever constant, where it's always changing, where it's always transforming. That's who I am. That's what this is. And so in that way, the tarot tells me who I am. It reminds us who we are.
Well, and that desire to accumulate more and more of something and to essentialize it and make it the focal point of what you think progress is and where everything needs to go. I mean, that's the tower, baby. Like, you're just building up and up and up.
Yep.
And
the Tower of Babel.
Energy, eventually, it's going to topple the whole thing over. You can't keep building up forever. For the peak of every wave, there's also a valley.
Yes. And thank the heavens for that. Like, so I know we might have talked about this a little bit when we first met, you know, because this is like my elevator pitch for this podcast is like, so I see this happening now. And I'm like just excited to be just some small part of it, you know, like what I can contribute to it. But like we have been doing what you're talking about, building this tower. I describe it as a wall because it's like we build this dividing wall. And it's like these enlightenment ideas of like, you know, this division of, and not only is it division of everything to its constituent parts, but obviously it's more than that. And it's like an obfuscation or even a deletion of the whole spiritual component of anything, this materialist kind of essential, like not that, because we're in a material universe, so there is a usefulness to materialism, but like a materialist reductivism, I think, is what I would describe it as, where it's like that's all there is, right? Like there's nothing else. And I've been there, and that was actually like the most depressing and destructive time of my life, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they coincided, you know, like that's when I was in heavy addiction. Anyway, so we've built these walls and we've put everything that we can't explain on the other side of them, or tried to at least. And right now what we're seeing is all of that is coming back flowing over the wall. Like you can't damn it.
Yeah.
It's just not how it works.
Not at all. And I, along those themes, I think a lot about the Suit of Swords.
Cool.
That we've got this symbol of a weapon, something that cuts and divides things. And it also references our minds, our logic, and the way that we explain and talk about the stuff around us. And if it is air, if it is ephemeral, then just like the wind, it's temporary. And it's a great way in that moment to make use of the resource of pentacles, the very metal that you've got to use to turn into the sword. But no logic, no bit of language or idea is ever going to fully encapsulate all of the ground, the trueness of the foundation, the processes within our bodies. We can understand them in different contexts and use that to great effect, but it never remains stable because biology and earth energy is continually shifting and changing a little bit. So we got to change our ideas. We got to change our language. If we think that one technology is going to solve all of our problems, it might solve some problems in a moment, but every sword tarnishes, it loses its blade, it has to be melted down and reforged if it's still going to be a sword. And so we are in a very swords era right now, where people think that there's some ultimate logic that will solve everything, but it's all just blowing away with the wind. We have to be okay with the fact that that doesn't remain permanent. Everybody has to think and shift through time.
And that brings, I love the elemental stuff because it's so evocative and just like such, just so potent with images. Like, it's like, try to cut the ocean with a sword.
Right. Yeah. Good luck.
Can you think of a more, of a better, like there's like that, I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's historically happened. I don't really care personally, because I think they're both just as valuable. But like, there's the story of like the Persian army being defeated by the Greeks in this one battle, and it was like a naval battle or something with the water getting in the way. And so the Persian emperor like had them whip the ocean. Like, it's that idea, like that it brings up that very idea of like that sort of vanity, right? To think that like,
yeah,
that's going to do anything.
Yep.
It's like this, like we, and they see the ocean is still a mystery to us, even though it's right It's like, we came from it?
It's right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love watching documentaries about that very dark mid-level ocean. We're still finding creatures because those creatures have so much space in between them and no light whatsoever. Like, they're just doing their thing. There's no news about them. They're just, you know, being the ocean.
Right.
Unbeknownst to us.
Yeah, they don't have... They're not on Twitter, you know? They're just living that ocean life. Yeah, and so that that cups, the vastness and the mystery and the ineffable beauty of the thrumming heart of the sea, like, that's just such a beautiful image for what we have inside of each of us.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're accessing when we do this. Like, sure, we're using all of the faculties because, you know, we're using our mind as well. But, like, really diving deep into that imaginal pool, into that collective unconscious, like, that's the ocean. Like, that when that fish is coming out of that cup.
Yep.
Paige, beautiful. I love it.
Which fish are you talking to today? Yeah.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, yeah, I got plenty of them in here. You know what? I think we've actually hit every question that I wanted to discuss in record time. Is there anything else particular that you wanted to talk about? I don't know what time.
Well, do you have any other favorite decks? Which ones do you like?
Oh, yeah, we can talk decks, dude. So this is interesting because, okay, so I in steady rotation, I, of course, have the Rider-Waite-Smith. Like, I just, there's certain things that's just good for.
Yeah.
I have a, I'm going to say the name of it wrong. It's like the Spanish playing card deck. It's like the Briscas or the, do you know what I'm talking about? It's a lot like it looks like a TDM and a playing card deck. Even though the TDM does look like a playing card deck, it looks like a mixture, like a step.
Yeah,
between the
no,
two.
I've seen it and I don't have a copy. I can't quite recall the name, but I know which one you mean. That's a cool deck.
It's cool. And I use that specifically to talk to like one spirit.
Nice.
Like that spirit, just that's their deck. But most generally I use the Norse Tarot. And
cool.
it's a Rider-Waite-Smith clone.
Yeah.
But it's got just the cool like Norse imagery, like the like ships and Vikings, and it's got all the, it tells the story of like Ragnarok. And the coming of the new gods.
Yeah.
With the, it's really good.
That's awesome.
But the funny thing about it is I use it a bunch. And dude, there are certain cards I've never seen in it.
Yeah.
Like in a reading. Like obviously I'll look at them, but like they don't come up. So it's very much like that's one of those ones where I'm like, are y'all talking to me?
You know, like, and decks will be like that. They will show you certain cards over and over again, and other ones you'll be flipping through and just be like, I've never pulled this in a reading before. What is up with that?
Yeah, and there's some that are like just all the time. I'm like, I almost get sick of it. I'm like, oh, this card again. What are you trying to say to me? Like, you being passive aggressively telling me something? But that's a really cool one, and I feel like it's got its personality of its own. I used to have the TDM in regular rotation, and for a long time I was just using just playing cards.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
and that's cool too. I mean, that helps with learn the pips and stuff, but there are also like I really like just sometimes using the majors of the TDM.
Yes,
those are really good because like they've got good sight lines.
Yeah,
like,
and a lot of people do that. Like, just thinking very much about that. Like, what are they offering to each other in their hands? What are they looking at?
Yeah.
And you can get a ton out of readings like that.
Yeah, a ton. And, like, dude, so I will say this. I'm going to make an admission here. I'm making an admission. I'm coming clean about something. You know, considering myself, like, a passably competent diviner, I will tell you this. I am often completely baffled by the court cards. Let's talk about court cards.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I didn't think about that, but let's talk about them. So the way I've heard it is like these are people, like this is always a specific person, I've heard different things and I want to hear your take on them.
I used to read them exactly like that, very consistently. But it wasn't clicking for most people. And over time, I have ascribed more energetic characteristics to them. But they are a more elaborate combination of parts of each of their courts. So parts of the suit that they come from. When we're talking about pages, this is youthful energy in that suit. So you think about a fiery kid in the Page of Staffs. And I love, like, in the TDM, the Page of Staffs has this giant staff that he's looking at. And, like, people, I've heard people on TikTok talk about, like, the Ace of Staffs is big dick energy. I think the Page of Staffs is the absolute symbol of big dick energy, because he's just standing there with that staff being like, what am I going to do with this thing?
Yeah, he's,
nobody's going to get in my way.
He's trying to give it, too. Like, that's what the page does, right? He's, like, there to deliver.
Exactly. That's his message, is I got all this energy. What are you going to do with it? So we get this sense of youthfulness, of excitement, of not wanting to be too committed, but still wanting to use the energy of that suit and do something with it. And of course, this might remind you of a person in your life that is doing that with you all the time. And then we're going to go that way in your reading. But it may be an energy that you need to cultivate in your life. You need to be more playful. Stop being so serious and thinking about consequences. Get out there and do stuff. Have some fun.
That's good. That's good. Because it usually confuses me when it's an action position, like what's the action to take, and then it'll be this person, and I'm like, how does that? Okay, that's great.
What's that? Yeah. The queens are more like the household managers. So they are the point in the kingdom where everybody else is coming to with their personal problems. In the actual household of the court, she is managing all of the servants and all of the events. She is the center point for what goes on inside the kingdom. And so when she comes up in readings, I'm talking a lot about hospitality, about communicating with people, about protecting the things that make everything function. You know, very much that Queen of Swords energy. She seems cold because she's sticking a sword out in everybody's face. But in the TDM, it's clear that she's pregnant. So she's got that sword out because nobody is going to mess with the important thing that she is growing and working on. But nobody else can see it right now. It's
that mama bear energy. It's like when you come across a mama bear, you're going to be scared.
Uh-huh. You better be. So the queen manages the inside. The knight is the explorer on the outside. He's going outside the boundaries of the kingdom to figure out, well, if you've got a lot of cups energy to work with, a lot of emotion, a lot of feelings swirling around, what is there outside of those feelings? What can you explore and attach to them that is going to help you out? And similarly, how can you serve as a good example to people who are in a different position? Because the knights are also the best equipped person in the kingdom. They are going out to show others what they can do. You know, think about knights jousting in a tournament. They're going to another kingdom to show the best of their kingdom. So they're the show-offs and also the explorers. Whereas the kings are also looking toward the outside, they are creating alliances, they are determining boundaries, they're thinking about how the resources of their kingdom can affect other kingdoms, and whether it's time to go to war and attack somewhere else, to create an alliance, to just let the boundary lie. They're thinking more about long-term plans and the big picture of what's going to happen in the future. And so if you apply those roles to the elements they come from in the courts, you may get a particular person, a father figure, a mother, a friend that can help you out in that position. But it may just be something that you need to bring more of to your own life.
Yeah. I like it. That's helpful to me. Cool. So I'll ask you back, what, besides the TDM, what are some decks that you either like currently like to use or like just all-time favorites?
One of the ones I always keep in my bag is the Cosmic Slumber deck. It was designed this comic book illustrator, Tilly Walden, made it. You can find a lot of her work on her website. But it is brilliantly colorful. Like, each suit definitely has its own color theme. And it's more like it's not a pip deck. So each of the minor cards is fully illustrated. But because it's about dreaming, the characters are sometimes just kind of hanging in space, or they're flipped upside down, along with the symbols of their suit. And it's a very gentle deck, but also very evocative. You can find a lot of meaning in every card. And the characters are really relatable. They're people of all different colors and genders and ages, so that no matter who I'm reading for, they're going to see themselves somewhere in that deck. It's the one I take out, especially if I'm reading for kids or if somebody is particularly upset about a subject. I don't want to hit them really hard. I want to give them a story about reconciliation and about how to deal with this in a calm way. I love that deck for those reasons. Another of my favorites that I don't see around very often is called the Crystal Tarot. And it's done more in the style of Gustav Klimt. And so, again, a lot of color, a lot of really stark textures within the cards. And those minor cards are designed around a method that a guy named Eude Picard developed in the 1800s, where they are much more elemental and more alchemical. So you get a lot more esoteric symbolism in each minor card. And the elements are actually shaken up a little bit. Swords have more to do with storms and the ocean, whereas in cups, you get like fountains and butterflies. So you get this kind of sense of flow and the soul in the cup suit, whereas swords is more about the clashing of elements.
Yeah, that also makes me think of that. I haven't seen that one, but it calls to mind the Thoth deck. How do you like that one?
Well, it's, man, I got...
Yeah, what's your hot take?
I have strong opinions about Crowley and his tradition in general,
I think you should, as one should.
The foundation of it being that the way that he treated women just really upsets me when I think about it.
Yeah, it's not good.
And Lady Freda Harris was the illustrator for the Thoth deck, and her work is beautiful. Like, I love the way that she's incorporated the symbols, the very sharp imagery of it, and the power of line in that deck is wonderful. But I'm also aware that, you know, for many of those cards, she did full paintings like 5 or 6 times, and Crowley would just tear her to pieces over the work that she did. Until, like, it seemed like he was very much attacking her ego and her sense of knowing anything at all in order to get this deck created. So I don't use it myself. I do refer to the images here and there because they are really powerful, and I know a lot of people love it. But, you know, I'm very respectful of Lady Freda Harris's work. The method that went into some of that is, in my mind, kind of a history of abuse.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I feel that. And honestly, just from a practical standpoint, like, it's just like the first one I tried to learn, which is like,
wow.
I don't think I would recommend that.
Yeah, that's a lot.
From a practical standpoint, I am much more, this is just a personal take too, I am much more into, like, looking at the cards and how they flow together, much more in like a TDM way, right? Like, who's looking at who, who's offering who, what are the images saying? Then I am like, what are the Kabbalistic and elemental attributions of the seventh aether? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, I don't fucking know. Like, I'm not going to memorize all that shit. So, like, I'm very much like, I like a deck that I can basically not really know anything about, and just read based on what I'm looking at. Like, I can cold read it because it's like like I said in the beginning, like the images just start to talk to me, you know?
And I like that because it lets you draw the other person into the conversation if you're reading for somebody else, and you can show them what you're talking about. Yeah. And like, I know people who love astrology and Kabbalah, and they utilize that to awesome effect.
Yeah, totally.
When they are reading. But I don't want everybody who approaches tarot to think, oh, well, like, I don't know all this other esoteric stuff. I don't understand these systems. There's no way I can do it.
Right. And that's so I definitely represent that side of it.
Yeah.
Like, and like, here's the thing. Like, I know enough to get by. Like, I definitely, you know, am in these circles and in this information. But yeah, I'm just not, it's not my style to like memorize a list of correspondences for each card. Like,
yep.
And that's, and you can do it, and I do it, and I do it well. You know what I mean? Like, it's that's available to anyone. But I love the people that can do it the other way too. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, that's awesome. I have nothing but respect for it. It's just not how I roll. There's so many ways to do this.
And man, that's like, you know, you do this podcast as an opportunity to learn about other perspectives. A lot of my tarot classes and gatherings are about me just saying, well, how do you guys do it? And I learned so much.
Yeah, that's
about
awesome.
Their perspective, about the possibilities. I love it.
Dude, that's the secret of teaching. It's like, y'all think you're getting taught, but y'all are teaching me. Like,
uh-huh.
I am just absorbing all this. And I was like, why am I not paying? I should be the one paying to do this. I'm not going to tell them that, though. That we'll keep that a secret.
Well, I mean, after you've done it for 20 years, like, you've got a lot for people to bounce things off of.
Yeah.
Because you've heard so many perspectives.
Yeah, and it's cool to hear your perspective of doing it that long, because I think it's been, what, at this point for me, maybe like 6 years so of looking at this stuff. And I don't, and we'll get, you know, this gives me an opportunity to ask this question. Like, what other systems of divination do you personally like to use? Or is it mostly just tarot for you? Like, what does that look like?
I get a lot out of what can be called siromancy, especially at the sunrise, having a chance to look at the clouds.
Oh, I like it.
If they're moving, what direction they're moving, how many layers you've got up there. It tells me a lot about the energy of the day. And I have better days when I do that on a regular basis. And
man,
I kind of
stuff.
Yeah, get my breath into that.
That's like some good, like, that's like fisherman wisdom too. Like, you know, like, it's like, it seems that's very nautical. Like, they can read the sky like that, you know? I like it.
Oh, it's part of my heritage. I mean, I do the tarot because I'm Italian, but also I'm descended from sailors, and there's something about reading the sky that just speaks to me.
Yeah, it speaks to me. Nice, man. That's cool. I didn't know that. Well, as you know, my last name is Sailor, so.
There you go, yeah.
I don't know that it actually means they were sailors. I think it might be a derivation from another word, but we'll just, you know. I do have some Viking stuff going on, too, so I'll just look at that. I like that a lot. Ciromancy? I'll have to look into that, because I love anything that gives you a little opportunity for pareidolia, or however you pronounce that. Like, anything that, like, have you ever, like, scried TV static?
Oh, yeah.
It'll start to show you stuff. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. You can see things in that. Anything that gives a just kind of a, I really think that one of the ways that spirits are able to manifest for us is having a matrix like that, that they can like manipulate. So like, that's why like a spirit box works, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just flipping through the channels of the radio, and it's giving the spirits a medium through which they can communicate. And I think the cards work this way too. And we're shuffling them. It's
yes.
Like, so like, I'm glad you mentioned the clouds thing, because one of the things I did want to talk about that I didn't write down was, after a while of looking at things this way, I can begin to read the world like I'm reading the deck.
Yep.
And that becomes a really cool, and it can be a little bit, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's perilous, right? Like, because I can start to read into everything to the point where like I go a little crazy, and I've done that before. And you know what? I probably needed to go through that. That's okay. But once I get to a base, like a nice baseline of balance where I'm like able to take in the information without becoming too attached to what it's saying.
Yes.
I can begin to read the world like a deck.
And that feeling of flow and fully knowing the experience that you're in. I mean, I'm not sure I know any single human who just does it all the time.
Right.
Like, we still got to deal with our bodies.
Yeah.
But approaching it as often as possible, and especially when you're with people that you trust and love, like, those are some of the best experiences that you can have.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's why, and also too, like, it's so nice to have friends that are into this stuff. Like, I know a lot of people don't have that opportunity. It's a wonderful thing to look for, though. If I highly recommend it, because it's so great. And yeah, that's something that you're offering too, right?
Absolutely. And it's a real privilege to be able to come together with people in those moments and to help them understand that their intensity is valid, their concerns are real, and that there's something they can do with that intensity. They're feeling that for a reason. They need it. And it's going to push them into becoming something that they've always wanted to be, but have had a hard time having the confidence to get through the path.
Yes. Well said. And it brings me to, I think, maybe the last thing we'll talk about here, because we're almost at the end of our time. Asking questions.
Yeah.
I want to talk real quick. I know this is like this is huge, because this is almost as big as like all the meanings of everything in the deck together, is how do I ask a question of the cards? What are the best types of questions to ask? Can you give a little rundown real quick of like maybe what to do or what not to do? Or like, how, I know what you probably teach this, so you can just, you know, default to that part of your lesson, but I want to hear what you have to say about it.
The ones that I like best are based around how can I, so you've got a goal in mind, you want to see the path, or if I do this, where's it going to go? Because that's going to give you a real clear reading. Or just to centralize it around a problem. I'm feeling this anxiety. I can't get rid of it. What perspective is going to help me? And I do get, you know, really general questions like, how can I make more money? The cards can help a little bit with that in a nudge, but almost every reader is going to like kind of intuit the kind of person you are and give you good general advice. Whereas if you say, if I start this car restoration company, how can I make more money? That's going to give that reader a much better focus on what you're trying to do, the elements that go into it, and how the cards are going to help you get to where you want to go. So the less general they are, the more information you're going to get. Although if you want a general reading, a good reader can do that too, but it's going to be the swirl of energy in your whole life. It's rare that they're going to say, you know, go talk to your brother and ask him about that plate that your grandmother left him, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's the specificity, I think, is the burden of the question.
Yeah.
Like, the more, like, and that's just helping the card. Like, so it's interesting because I actually think it's the same skill as coming up with a magical intention.
Yes.
It's the same. Like, I want to be specific. I want time periods. I want to be clear about what I'm doing. And so with a magical intention, there is a sense of like, well, you know, if I am not clear, it could be like, I'm going to get the money in like a really fucked up way. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I don't think there's so much of that with the cards, but there is like, I'm leaving it too open to where like it's going to confuse me. If I, you know, like if I'm just like, which like sometimes that, like you said, sometimes that works. Like there are some times when I just come to the cards and I'm like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes
that's
all I got, right? But I think for the most part, like a nice specific question with timetables and like actions, like it's so much better than like, what am I supposed to do? Because like,
and also kind of coming to it in terms of, this is what I'm trying to do.
Yes.
This keeps getting in my way. What's going on here? That's going to produce a useful spread that will get you somewhere.
Yeah. And it comes back to the number one. And sometimes, like, again, sometimes this can be the most difficult part of magic or spirituality or any of these practices. But it's the most important one, in my opinion. What do you want? What do you want? And when I ask myself what I want, there was a time when I never did that.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like living off old programming and like this programming of what I thought other people wanted from me and like what I was supposed to do and like what does a person like my age do? And I wasn't ever asking myself what I want. But once I started to ask myself, all of a sudden I get this. It is this like this image, this ideal that I can then it can pull me through.
Yes.
And the cards help me to see that path.
Yep. And those are always helpful questions. And if you really want to go deep and get down to your personal particulars, and in my mind, have the greatest agency in your life, asking the cards why you want what you want. Why am I so focused on this? That is going to help you truly understand yourself and open up your options.
Interesting. I'll have to try that one. I don't think I've ever done that. That's good.
Because then you go from, well, I want this, and here are all the reasons why I think I should get it in this way, because it comes with all this furniture. But when you break it down into the reasons why you want that thing, you start realizing, oh, wait, part of why I want this is because my parents never gave it to me. But there's this other urge behind that desire that I think will be easier and much more satisfying to get to if I take some of these other parts away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Because for me, usually what I do is like, well, how about I just get it? And then once I get it, I'll find out if I actually want it or not.
Yeah, then we'll see.
And that sometimes leads to a, you know, I don't have any regrets, but I'll tell you, it's sometimes it leads to rabbit holes.
Like, I have a lot of conversations like that about marriage.
Oh yeah. That's, I had that experience.
I wanted
too.
To get married. I thought
I had that
wait.
Experience too. Yeah. And you know what, dude, like I'm so hard headed that sometimes it just takes having the experience, or like, honestly, it usually does. But I actually have come to a point where I'm like, oh, you know what? It might be at this point in my life be nice to know ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe that's just a sign of growth. I don't know.
Well, and the fool can still have some fun. You know, there'll still be some questions in there, but
definitely. Like, there's particulars that are, you know, not quite my business that I get to explore along the way.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Dude, Nick, it's been great talking to you.
This has been so much fun, Tim.
Yeah, so much fun, dude. And we'll have to do it again. We'll have to do some deep dives.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about, like, you know, there's other things we can talk about, like Oracle decks and stuff like that, that we can maybe do on another one.
That'd be great.
Just great. Great talking to you. Like I said, I learned a lot. Real quick, one more time, if you want to give the people where they can get a reading from you, where they can find you both online and IRL, as we say.
So if you stop by Eclipse Over Roswell, that is in Roswell, Georgia, on Mondays and Thursdays, I'll be there every afternoon, and I'll generally have some kind of class offering on both of those evenings. Outside of that time frame, you can contact me through newelltarot.com or my Instagram account, which is at newelltarot. I am working on expanding the social media. And I'm available for readings, for parties, also any interest you might have in doing work with groups. Like I've read for both like individuals in a row for businesses. I can also do readings for a business in general. You got a team effort you're trying to do. Let's get some tarot cards on the board to figure out how the team can approach it. So any kind of problem or activity that you want to build around finding a solution, tarot can be helpful for.
Awesome, man. Great stuff. And again, thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to doing it again.
Thank you. Me too.
And I hope you have a great one.
You too. Take care.
Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.